Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Esprit.net News.
I want to get the language right tonight.
This is America. Your president is
don't ever let anybody tell you that your efforts don't matter.
This is not a war zone. These are unarmed people.
Politicians and commentators.
Don't let anybody take your man.
Does that remind you that I've done this before?
It doesn't make you tough to hurt these people.
You have tuned into Independent Thought Radio, where we cover world and national news with current affairs. Some good, some bad, but it's all the news you need to know. I'm your host, Jerome Esprit, bringing you straight talk outside the headlines. So sit back and relax, call in, or hit us up in chat. Now, as long as you're ready, we're ready. Welcome again to Esprit.net News. I'm your host, Jerome. If this is your first time here, just want to remind you, we are a weekly news summary wrap-up show. We're going to give you all the news that you're not getting in mainstream media, maybe some news stories, but not many, some that you may have missed. So thanks for tuning in. I want to remind you our dialing number is 909-265-9189. If you're listening to this in the archives, we're here live every Thursday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, before I start the show, I want to say happy birthday, Diane, Shauna, Dee Patterson, Dwayne Dean, everybody who has a birthday around the time that I have a birthday. So, and I want to thank everyone for all of the text, well wishes, posts, all those things, emails that was sent. I really appreciate it, and I just want to say thank you again for tuning in. Now, on this program, ESPN versus Jemele Hill. We're going to talk about this that story in depth, so we have that. If you haven't heard, Sloane Stephens became the U.S. Open champion, and she beat Madison Keys. We have that story. Hackers exploited a two-month-old flaw in Equifax's web system and stole 143 million customers' private details. Oprah is to debut on 60 Minutes in September on the 24th with the story about the America's political divide. Low-hanging fruit for Oprah, but there you go. Snapchat is rolling out a new feature which allows you to be placed in the real world. It's going to place your Bitmoji on surfaces and scales and move them around globally. That's going to start up tomorrow for you guys who have Snapchat. And facial reading AI will soon detect your political beliefs and IQ. This is the researchers who are behind that controversial Gadar software that they claim. So we have that this week in court and much more. But I want to welcome you again on to Esprit.net News. You can call in, join us, 909-265-9189. You can hit us up in chat. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to news@soulofsyracuse.com. And I may read them on the next show or not. You know, I have to put that out there as a disclaimer. Now, our first story, Sloane Stephens became the U.S. Open champion after beating Madison Keys. Now, this was on Saturday night. Stephens showed outstanding composure on the biggest occasion of her life, in sharp contrast to her opponent, who they said nerves prevented her from getting, greater play out of her. Now, Stephens is a daughter of former New England Patriots NFL player John Stephens. She was away from her most of her childhood, although they had reconnected, but he was killed in a car accident in 2009. Her father didn't get to see her play any of her great tennis. You know, she's been out for a while. Her coach, Kamal Murphy had a message for Sloane when she called him 5 months ago because she was out injured And he said, let me know when you can walk. That was following her surgery. She was not allowed to put any weight on her foot for up to 16 weeks. She began hitting a tennis ball, sitting in a chair. 2 months after her first tournament back, she has now won the U.S. Open. So the story, Stephen said, on court, following her 6-3 and 6-0 beating of Madison Keys in the final, was possible, yet there she was lifting her, you know, Grand Slam trophy on her home soil to become the first American to win the U.S. Open since Serena won her third successive in 2014. You know, the thing is that I guess she was injured. She was ranked 957th a month ago, and she comes back and wins the U.S. Open, so which makes her, you know, a great success story. And, you know, if you saw any of it or the highlights or watched it online, it was cool to see her surprise of collecting that check of $3.7 million. You know, but she was ranked 957 in July. On July 31st, she climbed more than 900 spaces within a month, 2 months, but she really wasn't in the top 20 until recently. So I guess she's in the top 20 now. So congratulations to Sloane Stephens. I've always liked her, you know. And shout out to my brother Troy in Rochester. You know, we both kind of had to give her shout outs on social media. So, hey, Troy, I agree with everything you said about Sloane. So just wanted to put that out there. All right. Now, millionaire, former penthouse owner, he let 70 foster children stay in his mansion full of arcade games to shelter from Hurricane Irma. Now, Mark Bell, who was the ex-penthouse boss, and his wife Jennifer took in dozens of foster children who had been sleeping on a gymnasium floor in Florida in the wake of that catastrophic storm. So whenever I see stories that are not getting reporting, again, on our news program, we're trying to tell you some stories that you're not getting on mainstream, but that was a good story. And also, a man helped his girlfriend deliver his baby girl at the height of the hurricane with the help of a 911 operator. Now, as everyone left in the U.S., southernmost stretch of the Florida Keys, they bogged down for, you know, preparation of this catastrophic storm on Sunday night, and Tayana Watkins went into labor, and her boyfriend was there, called 911, and delivered a healthy baby named Destiny. So there you have it. Congratulations to those guys and baby Destiny. Tiffany Hatfield, who's 28, evacuated her home with three daughters in Ocala, I guess, Florida, late Friday night to drive to Virginia. They stopped in North Carolina, bought a lottery ticket, and won $10,000. So, again, she's probably going to need it. I don't know what part of – well, I don't know where Ocala or whatever it's called – Florida is, but hey, she hit lotto, $10,000. Now, the credit agency giant, Equifax, good Lord, I can't believe I just forgot the name. I was going to call them the other agency, so I didn't want to get the wrong agency. The agency is Equifax. They had a hack. And they said the hack of their cybersecurity system may have affected 143 million customers and included a lot of private information, including your credit card numbers, birth dates, your last couple of residences, your past jobs of employment, and your driver's license. A ton of information. So before you sign up with Equifax to, you know, check on your credit history and see if your information was in the breach, read their fine print. I know a couple of senators have gone after Equifax and some attorney generals in certain states and told them they cannot charge, people are not waiving their right to sue you if they sign up for your service. So I think they stopped saying that, but I'm not really sure. So you might want to verify that before you go to check your own information on Equifax. Of course, they should be responsible if your information gets out there because they got hacked. It's kind of why they should have insurance. But, yeah, you know, I guess I can't say anything about that. But just check. It's Equifax Credit Agency is what you're looking for. Apple has revealed its newest smartwatch, and it will be equipped with its own built-in cellular capabilities for the first time. The $399 Series 3 Apple Watch will allow users to make calls directly from their wrists, much like previous versions, but with an integrated SIM card. I don't know what I was going to call it, SIM, with an integrated SIM card and display that becomes an antenna. So you can now do so without having, you know, make phone calls without having a phone nearby. So the Apple Watch also boasts a new exercise feature, a faster dual-core processor, and 18-hour battery life, making it, I guess, one of Apple's most powerful watches that they've ever made. So if you feel like giving up $399 to get a new watch, there you have it. But you'll be able to make calls along with that. I don't think it'll fix dinner for you or make anything for you, but you can make more calls. Now, a warning to women lacking vitamin D. Now, a major study finds deficiency in the number of people with the sunshine vitamin is what they're calling it, they raise your risk of MS by 43% if you have a deficiency in vitamin D. Now, a study by Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health says the measuring vitamin D levels could denote one's risk, which shows a healthy amount of sunshine vitamin is key to preventing MS. So want to have a little bit more vitamin D in your system. All right, now pharmaceutical companies often say it costs about $2.7 billion to produce medicine to fight cancer, but a new study by Oregon University says it costs around $650 billion, almost a quarter less than they say that it costs. So, again, whatever you're paying, just kind of a quarter of that is probably should be your actual charge, but they're inflating rates, as we all know. But according to this new study by Oregon University, they're saying that it's at least costing them a quarter less than what they're saying. Now, the CDC said on Monday that 39 people in the U.S. contracted Campylobacter infection that from puppies in the last year. Now, never heard of this, but they're saying that 9 people have been hospitalized, but there have been no deaths. So puppies are making people sick. And while we're at this, Belgian doctors have found a patient had a cat scratch disease after various tests. This guy had 23, had erectile dysfunction, can't even say it. Boy, it's really hard to get out. All right, so it was caused by a bacterial infection called Bartonella, Bartonella henselae, which can be found in the mouth and claws of a cat. Now, the man who was 22 was left unable to get an erection after the scratch by a cat, but they're saying it is from saliva from the cat, and it can be in the mouth or in on their claws. I've never heard of this. So now puppies and cats. Be careful, guys. Just wanted to put that out there. All right, I want to remind you, you're listening to EsperNet News. You can call in and join us, 909-265-9189. And if you missed any of our shows in the past, you can always look us up in the archives at EspreeRadio.soulofsyracuse.com. My words of my girl, Lucy Abreu, there's always news you can use. So I'm sure there's something that you haven't heard on each program. So if you want to check us out in the archives, feel free. Or you can go to BTR and look up Esprit Radio. Either way, you can find it. And before I go any farther, for all the people in Florida that I know of that are safe, you know, everyone be safe. Florida, Port Arthur, Houston, guys, all of Louisiana, all of my family there. And Opelousas, I don't know where to begin. All of them, Beaumont. Everybody be safe. I want to say hey to Jathan. I'm glad you're okay in the Keys. You know, once you get your power back, you know, look forward to seeing you on social media. Did see that. Shelly, everybody in Florida, you know, I think I probably need to make some calls. But if you're listening to the show, I am glad everyone's okay. And but I haven't heard from everyone, but so I just want to put that out there. And if you're listening, I just want to say, you know, thanks for tuning in and checking in. Hopefully I can give you something to distract you just for an hour of, you know, of the tragedy that's going on in your area, in your neck of the woods. So everyone be safe. And, you know, my folks in Atlanta and, you know, South Carolina and all you guys who are getting bad weather as well. Hey Kai, you know, if you hit one on your line, if you want to jump in, Kai, and the commish, sure the commish will be joining us a little bit, so feel free. I know you guys like to sit back and listen to the show a little bit, but technically I would like to hear how everybody's doing. So if you want to report on what's going on in your area, feel free, hit one on your line and I'll bring you in. Now the CDC said on Monday, well, this is not coming from the CDC. Sorry, this is from Nottingham University and King's College in London. They're saying that eating salmon is good for your gut or good for gut health. Omega-3 boasting the diversity of microbes to ward off diabetes, obesity, and Crohn's disease. They're saying that, you know, if you add weight to the emerging body of evidence, it suggests the same thing from the findings of Nottingham University and King's College in London. So, hey, eat salmon. It's good for your gut health. That's the moral of that story. Now, in San Diego is doing street cleaning every other week and extending public restrooms hours due to a hepatitis outbreak. It's hepatitis A. And, you know, they're bleaching the streets, literally bleaching the streets. And they said that 15 people have died and close to 400 people have been infected this year. And now, again, they're saying it's because people are not washing their hands and all of that good stuff because there's a lot of homeless and there's no public restrooms. People aren't letting them use public restrooms. All right, now a toddler is hospitalized after ingesting marijuana in his parents' home. This is also in San Diego. An 18-month-old's parents who live in San Diego are being investigated for child abuse after ingesting marijuana that caused an acute intoxication for children. So, you know, be careful and keep your stuff away from your kids. All right, now I just want to go to the ESPN story with Jemele Hill. You know, at 6 p.m. on Wednesday evening, just 3 hours after the White House encouraged ESPN to fire Jemele Hill, Jemele Hill sat next to her co-star Michael Smith on the set of their daily Sports Center show. It's called The Six. Now, I watched the show. She was there. After the, you know, they were talking about the Cleveland Indians' historic 21-game winning streak. Now, if you don't know what happened, Jemele Hill tweeted on Monday that Donald Trump was a white supremacist, and that escalated when ESPN issued a statement on Tuesday reprimanding her for her comments. And then White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, a.k.a. Wednesday Adams, said that Hill's tweet was fireable. It was a fireable offense. So they were really trying to get her fired at ESPN. So ESPN originally tried to keep Hill off the air on Wednesday evening, but Smith refused to do the show. And Ellie Duncan, I guess they asked, according to her source, they're saying that Smith refused to do the show without her. And there were some sources that said that producers reached out to two other black ESPN hosts, Michael Eaves and L. Duncan, and asked them to serve as fill-ins for the show, but both of them disagreed to take the place of Smith and Hill. Now, way to stand up for the people at ESPN. And ESPN is denying the rumors, by the way, that they did not try to get her or try to replace them at all. But I'm glad they stuck together. Now, Donald Trump, you know, what she wrote was, Donald Trump is a white supremacist who has largely surrounded himself with other white supremacists, is what she tweeted. And then she added that he is unfit, bigoted, incompetent moron who is unqualified and unfit to be president. Now, Hill has not apologized for her comments. However, she did tweet on Wednesday night that she regretted the fact that the comments painted ESPN into an unfair light. But I'm glad she didn't take it back, because it is pretty much obvious. And just like in the, if you didn't see it a long time ago, this is during the Obama administration, The Simpsons, the cartoon, did this scene where this helicopter, you know, Fox News helicopter passes the screen, and it says at the bottom, Fox News is not racist, it's the home of racists. Well, Donald Trump, if you're not racist, you are definitely a friend to racists. So just own it and get over it, because no matter who tries to let you off the hook from this, none of us will. So take that and do what you like. But technically, we can't help it. That is, we can't call it either, any other way. There's no censorship. You're acting like that, and you defend races. What you gonna do? All right. Now, if you have any questions or comments, probably keep them to yourself. But if you're on the line, hit one of your line. I will bring you in. That's not a problem. Hey, it's kind of like that. Or if you have any questions or comments, you want to put them in the chat, I may bring them up in the chat, so you can actually add them in there as well. Now, people of color have been exposed to 40% more pollution than white people since 2000, leading to 5,000 unnecessary deaths, according to a major study. Now, black, Asian, and Latino Americans have been exposed to more harmful pollution than white people over the last 10 years, and they're saying it led to the 5,000 unavoidable deaths. An unprecedented study has revealed from the University of Washington. Now, most reports say overall exposure has dropped in harmful chemicals, this research shows that it's not for the case of ethnic minorities. They found disparities in nitrogen dioxide exposure were larger by race and ethnicity than by income, age, or education, and persisted across the decade. Now, the study concludes that if people of color had breathed in lower NO2 levels experienced by whites in 2010, it would have prevented an estimated 5,000 premature deaths from heart disease amongst non-white groups. Now, this includes exposure to harmful air pollutants emitted by cars, trucks, power plants, and other combustible sources. So there you have it. If you want to go look that up, it is a report by the University of Washington. Because I know sometimes when we do show, I like to say where the researchers are coming from, because, you know, we're not just pulling these stories out of thin air. They are actually on the wire. Now, Claudine De Niro, Robert De Niro's daughter-in-law, She's accused of racial discrimination by a former nanny. Now, the mother of three allegedly told an African-American woman, I wouldn't have hired you if I had known you were black. Now, Claudine is married to Ralph De Niro, whose mother is black, which also means that Claudine's children with him are biracial. Now, the mother, who's 40, was already being sued by a former domestic worker who filed a suit in New York 6 months ago claiming that Claudine had withheld wages and failed to pay her workers overtime despite them working close to 60 hours a week. So I don't know what she's thinking about, but Claudine De Niro, which sounds like an ethnic name itself, but she's not, but she's getting sued, apparently. She has been going off the rails. Just want to say that. Although I like Robert De Niro, just wanted to say that for the record. The story was just out there, and again, we're just doing stories that nobody else is doing. All right. Now, Nevada could become the first state in the U.S. to create marijuana clubs and lounges. I get it. And I'm thinking of LES, by the way, if you're listening. What's up, bruh? But I'm kind of thinking of LES on this. I know I normally do these stories on, you know, I'll probably talk about this on Sunday. No doubt. But Las Vegas, anyway, if you're traveling to Las Vegas, they could become the first state in the U.S. to create marijuana clubs and lounges, meaning travelers could legally get high in Las Vegas. Now, officials in Nevada have opened the door for the state to be the first in the union to allow the use of recreational marijuana in clubs and lounges. So, you know, just how you have, I guess, regular smoking rooms that probably will be smoking clubs for people who smoke marijuana. I'm guessing. Don't know. But, hey. They started the process. All right, I want to remind you to listen to EsprNet News. You can call in and join us at area code 909-265-9189. And if there is a story that I haven't talked about, you can always send it to news@soulofsyracuse.com. Or, you know, you can drop it in the chat room. I'll check it out and see if we can use it on air. If not, you know, I don't know what we can do. So I just want to say, hey, to everyone that's on the line, remember, if you want to come in, just hit one of your line, and I will bring you in. Otherwise, have more stories. Now, there's a mind-reading armband that could let people control their smartphones with the power of thought. They said that it could be released as early as next year. Now, experts from Control Labs believe they could have a watch strap-sized device to control your smartphone with your thoughts released by early 2018. Now, it might seem the stuff of science fiction, but Control Labs counts engineers and scientists from one of the world's top academic institutions, including Stanford, Johns Hopkins, and Imperial College in London amongst their staffers and advisors. They have already built a non-invasive prototype device in the form of a wearable armband that lets users control an on-screen keyboard and even play games. So apparently they're moving ahead, and they're moving ahead quickly, but they suspect that you'll be able to control your smartphones through thought before, I guess, early 2018. I was going to say before the end, so I guess it's both. Early 2018. So I have no interest in it, so I don't really have an opinion on it. But if you do, just let me know. Now, Sacramento Kings forward Zach Randolph avoided jail time and was sentenced to community service on Wednesday after being charged with marijuana possession and resisting arrest. Now, I'm not going to give too much more detail about the story. You can look it up if you want, but apparently he was pulled over on a side of town that they run patrols looking for folks. So that's all I'm going to say about that. But he did receive community service. So I don't expect anything from the NBA, but they haven't released a statement on it. So hopefully they'll be over and done with. I don't think so, but I just thought I'd put that out there. All right. Now, a decorated married Marine colonel who sexually abused his daughter, his sexually abused daughter of one of the men serving under him. Now, he's the colonel, but there was somebody serving under him who sexually abused his six-year-old daughter. He was sentenced to 5.5 years in prison. So Colonel Daniel Wilson, who was awarded the Bronze Star amongst other medals, was sentenced on Sunday. He was also found guilty of behavior of unbecoming an officer in his post in Australia. So he has to serve 5 years. I don't really get the story, but I think someone under him sexually abused his daughter, but he has served some time in prison. Okay. Actually, this is how it goes. He abused a six-year-old of a man who was serving under him. So it wasn't his daughter. It was the guy who was serving under him. See, I knew it was something like that. Just didn't ring right. But anyway, he's serving 5.5 years for sexually abusing a six-year-old. That would be Colonel Daniel Wilson, in case you want to look that story up. Now, a university security guard is arrested after accidentally shooting himself and blaming it on a mystery suspect, causing 1,800 students to be trapped in their dorm rooms on lockdown. So the security guard at the University of Minnesota or Minnesota University has been charged with a misdemeanor after accidentally shooting themselves. Now, there was no other details, and they didn't tell us if it was a profile that he gave them, but he just said it was a mystery person, an imaginary suspect, something like that, was the person that he had to go after. Now, an intoxicated 13-year-old boy who led police on a 100-mile car chase in North Carolina is arrested after he admitted drinking a can of Four Loko. Now, the teenage boy was arrested in eastern North Carolina on September 6th for driving intoxicated at 100 miles per hour. But the 13-year-old was later arrested under juvenile petitions. So, actually, I don't know what Four Loko is. I thought it was an energy drink, but apparently he's still under the influence. So there you have it. No sentence, but he is charged as a juvenile. Now, speaking of kids, you know, the oldest children in a class are more successful. Those born in early September go on to perform better at a college. Now, this is according to a new study. Older children are more likely to get into elite universities than younger classmates, and it comes out, and they even come up with better marks. However, the study found that August-born children have a higher chance of being incarcerated for juvenile crimes. Now, the research from the University of Toronto, Scarborough, in Canada, followed a group of children in Florida born either side of the cutoff date for school entry. So if you want to know where these numbers are coming from, they followed some kids in Florida. But it was a Toronto University study. I don't know what that means, but okay. So I don't want to say to that story. George Clooney slammed former White House political strategist Steve Bannon on Friday, lashing out at Breitbart News while he was promoting his new film in Canada. Now, he was speaking to journalists at this year's Toronto Film Fest to promote his new film, Suburbicon. And it's a dark comedy set in the 50s, if you want to know. Clooney described Bannon as a failed effing screenwriter. He said, "I like that Breitbart News want to have my head. I'd be ashamed 10 years from now if those weaselly little putzes whose voices are getting a lot higher every week as the president starts to look worse and worse aren't still after me." He said that Steve Bannon is a failed effing screenwriter, and if he'd ever read his screenplay, it's unbelievable. If he somehow managed to miraculously get that thing produced, he'd still be in Hollywood making movies and licking my butt, but he used an A word for that, to get me to do one of his stupid A screenplays. I think George Clooney does not like him. Now, I never really heard too many stories about that, but apparently George Clooney is really not afraid to deal with the crazies, but apparently he's taking a shot at Steve Bannon, who is crazy, by the way. I just wanted to say that for record. I guess I shouldn't call them crazy. They are crazy like something. All right. Now, Ronald, I guess, is Roald Dahl, who originally wrote the character, the lead character of his much loved children's book, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He originally wanted that Charlie to be a black kid. He said a little black boy is what his widow revealed. Now, despite every film version of the tale and Quentin Blake's illustration portraying Charlie Bucket as a white with fair hair, I guess is what it is. His widow, Lacey Dahl, said yesterday that it was never her late husband's intention to have him be a white kid. She said that first Charlie he had written was about a little black boy, and I'm sure that was influenced by America. Now, they're British, by the way, if you're thinking why was that important. He asked why he had changed. The interviewer asked why he had changed, and she said, "I don't know. It's a great pity." But his biographer, Donald Sherlock, suggested that his agent thought it was a bad idea. He said, "I can tell you that it was his agent who thought it was a bad idea when the book was first published to have a black hero." She said, the reporter asked, she said people would ask why, is what his agent said. An interviewer suggests that the story could now be rewritten to revert to a black character, which Mrs. Duhall said, it would be wonderful, wouldn't it? The revelations of his intentions for his young hero in this 1964 novel comes despite the fact that the original version of the story prompted allegations of racism over the Oompa Loompa characters being black pygmies from Africa. So in the 1971 film starring Gene Wilder, Willy Wonka and Peter Ostrom as Charlie, the Oompa Loompas had orange skin and green hair to save any from any offenses. Now, I want to say after reading the story from his widow, that I want to say I would not think that the Oompa Loompas had anything to do with black folks. It was just that it was pretty racist, so that's how people kind of think. But to know that his real intentions is to make the black kid the hero, that says a little something, like he wouldn't be degrading black people at the same time that he made the black person a hero. But that's just me. So, again, just think about when this was written. He wrote it. And that novel was 1964. So when it got to America, the Americans changed it to be racist. I can't say thank you, Trump, for that one. But, hey, it looks like that's what happened. So next time I watch out the Willy Wonka or the Chocolate Factory, it will give me a different type of perspective on Willy Wonka. Just wanted to put that out there. All right. You're listening to EsperyNet News. We're going to take a quick break, and now I'm going to come back and give you a little bit more news for today. All right. All right, welcome back. I want to tell you, you're listening to Esprinet News. Just need to take a quick breather. Now I'm back. We can return to some news. But before I do that, before I get back to the news, let me bring in the commish. You know, hey, commish, how are you?
Hey. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I was shouting you out the whole show because I knew you were going to come in when I did the Jemele Hill versus ESPN story and talk about Sloan Stephens. So I'm going to talk about them both with you because I know you want to. You're going to want to talk about U.S. Open.
Oh, my gosh.
I kind of see it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Just in case we missed any of that, you know. Sorry, my alerts went out. They just went out. Show's been going on for a while, and my alerts just went out. So sorry about that for everybody who's on the line now that I can see that we're joining the program. Now, the story I just finished before I went to break was the widow of the person who wrote the Willy Wonka story, the Charlie in the Chocolate Factory story in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
She said that her husband wrote the lead character to be black. And
yes.
It was her agent to actually tell him that it was a bad idea.
Yes.
So she, in an interview, I guess in Britain, some part of Europe, that they are celebrating the book, like the anniversary of the book, but it was in 1964, it was written, or it came out. She's saying it would be nice if they can rewrite it back to its original black character, is what she said. But she said that she thinks that because it went to America is why they changed it. I'm like, America's racist? That's kind of what popped in my head. But she said she's sure it was influenced by America. I'm like, I'm pretty sure too. I just wanted to tell her that for the record.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
That could be.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I heard them say that Oompa Loompas was supposed to be black too.
Yes, and she did address that. They said when the alleged allegations of racism was because of the Oompa Loompa characters being black pygmies is what they thought it was. So in the 1971 film with Gene Wilder, they changed it that the Oompa Loompas had orange skin and green hair to save any offense, you know, so that nobody would be offended. But thinking about the original version of it, I would not think that they were black. Because the creator said it was supposed to be fictitious, like that part, the Oompa Loompas, was just made up characters inside the book. But the main character was a black kid, and he was going to win it, and, you know, the goodness was going to come. Remember how corrupt all the other little kids were? Can you imagine an image of that if he was the only person of color there and everybody else was corrupt, but he went, he gets the chocolate factory?
Yeah.
So, of course, again, it's written in 64, and they made the movie in America, and you see how that turned.
they didn't want any thoughts about reparations going into the minds of black folks.
They're like, wait a minute, he went to Chocolate Factory. Yeah.
Yeah. But, of course, he was a black kid. Willie? Come on. That was my dad's name. Willie? Well, they called him Willie anyway.
His name was Charlie.
I should have known better.
Either way.
You know Willy was black.
Oh, Willy Wonka. Oh, yeah, Willy Wonka was black. The little boy's name was Charlie, though.
Yeah, well, you know
so,
what I mean.
Yeah. So,
Charlie,
you're right. I'm with you. Willy was black. Willy Wonka was black. Okay.
Willy, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
I didn't see that coming.
I think I know Charlie. Well, we call him Chuck, but whatever. Like, either way. Either way. I know them both. Okay, now, here, the story that I wanted to get your opinion on. Oh, you know, before I go to that, you know, actually, I won't do the George Clooney one because we just talked about that, and he made some comments, but It was about Steve Bannon, so we won't go to the political stuff because that's all over the news today, and so we'll miss that one.
Which one? Which Steve Bannon? I just like, oh my gosh.
Well, the guy who was supposedly, the guy who was supposedly a strategist, which he's no good political strategist. He's just like a racist that know how to appeal to racist people, right? He has a niche. He don't know what anybody else is going to do, but he knows what white folks want. That was his thing. So, but anyway, I guess George Clooney, I guess I might as well do the story, but George Clooney slammed him by saying that he was at the Toronto Film Fest, and he said, you know, Bannon is a failed effing screenwriter, and if you ever read his screenplays, it's unbelievable. Now, if he'd somehow managed to miraculously get that thing produced, he'd still be in Hollywood, still making movies and licking my butt, and he used the A word, to get me to do one of his stupid A screenplays. That's what George Clooney said. George Clooney apparently don't like that racist guy from Breitbart. and he said he'd be ashamed 10 years from now if those weaselly little putzes did not like him at Breitbart. Right? Because he would be like, what was I doing that I let all of these fools say all of that stuff and I didn't say nothing? So he said, Yeah. I was most people felt like that because technically that's what let racist people like survive, is because nobody says anything and they act like, oh, they weren't that bad. You know, hence our Jemele Hill story. Right? So Jemele Hill from ESPN, SportsCenter, The Six, she was on TV on Wednesday after, you know, Monday, she tweeted that Donald Trump was a white supremacist. And so it escalated. On Tuesday, ESPN reprimanded her. And then White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, a.k.a. Wednesday Adams, tweeted that that was a fireable offense. So, you know, ESPN originally tried to keep her off the air, is what was being reported. But then they went to her co-host, Michael Smith, and he refused to do the show without her. So sources are saying that producers reached out to two other black ESPN hosts, Michael Eaves and L. Duncan, and asked them to fill in, and they told them no. Now, ESPN is denying that part of the story, but here's what Jemele Hill tweeted. Donald Trump is a white supremacist who has largely surrounded himself with other white supremacists, and she added that he was unfit, bigoted, incompetent moron who is unqualified and unfit to be president. So she did not apologize for her comments. However, she did tweet on Wednesday night that she regret the fact that the comments painted ESPN into an unfair light. But I'm glad she did not apologize because I think it's true. Okay,
it's
there you have
true.
It. Which, yeah.
It's
I don't think she
true.
Had anything. Yeah, I don't think she had anything to apologize for.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw any of that stuff going.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I didn't know if they were trying to fire her. I know.
Yes, the story is that they were trying to fire her, but ESPN denied that, and they put out a statement yesterday saying that they accept her apology. But I think they were trying to fire her.
Yeah.
And they definitely tried to keep her off the air on Wednesday where she was on the air. Everybody refused to do the show. So, you know, everyone was looking. Because, again, she did this on Monday. And then the White House, like nuts, are coming out making a statement saying that she should be fired. Now, just like, you know, I mentioned this earlier in the show, Fox had that cartoon that had who was it? The Simpsons had the cartoon with the Fox helicopter that had the tagline, Fox News is not racist, they're the home of racists. If you can have the racists tell somebody to fire somebody because they called a racist racist, then you are technically racist. You need to deal with it. You know what I mean? Why would ESPN even react to them saying you should fire them for calling me racist because you're racist. You obviously have a problem with people of color. Just deal
right.
with it. So, you know, I know this story is not going away, but that's something
I'm
else.
Sure
that,
it is not, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not even a big Jemele Hill fan, but I can tell you I am now.
Yeah,
it wasn't before.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm
yeah.
a fan, though, but I'm with you.
Right. See, I knew from before, I can't remember what was going on, but I knew Jemele Hill you liked. The other one, not so much. The Steel Woman. I know I didn't like her.
Right.
When we were doing Black on Black Crime, I forgot
yeah.
what crime she committed. It was something like they were protesting and she couldn't get a flight someplace and she was mad at the protesters. It was like stupid. Anyway, I remember that stage still. So she'll never get a pass. But Jemele Hill, if she did that right now, I'd forgive her.
Yeah.
Because she still did not back down. Even if they fire her, she's still hanging in there. But again, I think that we all need to call this out for what it is. So don't be afraid, don't be scared. That guy is that's the White House is the home of racists. That's all I could tell you. Or white supremacists,
right.
like whatever, if you feel comfortable with that. Maybe they're not racist, they're just white supremacists. does that feel better? just thought I'd throw that in there. All right.
Well, that's what she put in there. She wrote white supremacist. She didn't say racist.
Oh,
but
right.
No,
I said
racist.
My bad. Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah.
She said he's a white supremacist who surrounds himself primarily
with other
white
supremacists.
But it's true.
Yes.
I mean, how
yeah,
can they? I'm so confused about this.
Yeah, I'm confused by why anybody would be upset. That's what I'm confused by. Now, I can tell you that although the two white supremacists, Jeff Sessions and Trump, don't get along, they're still white supremacists. Like they are still cut from the same cloth, even if whether they get along or not. So, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, let me
that this is starting to feel more and more like a communist society. So basically they're saying that you cannot speak out against the crazy man who's running the country or else we will destroy you.
Well, that normally happens, though, Kathleen. Look at Colin Kaepernick, right? And I don't know if you saw with the owner of I forgot what team that was. Oh, I don't want to call out a team because I can't remember who it was. But one of the NFL owners came out and they said something like, Colin Kaepernick is not being picked up because they don't like the image that he's portraying. Like, they are coddling racism, too. Colin Kaepernick didn't say jack to nobody. All he did was sit down. And they act like he shot somebody. So that's what white supremacy is. It's saying that if you're not conforming 100%, hey, you can abuse women. You can have a DWI. You can run over people. You can have a sexual assault like Ben Roethlisberger. You can do all these things, but you can't be in the league if you call them, if you acknowledge supremacy. You acknowledge it, you can't be here. That's a death penalty case for them. All right. Before I get off this subject, let me go to the phone lines. I think I know who this is. Welcome to Esprit Net News. I think this is Brother Sean from Syracuse. What's up, bro?
Brother Esprit, how you doing?
Oh, sure is. How you doing, bro? You're on with
me
and Kathleen.
I'm finally up catching your show, brother.
I was going to say, see, sometimes it takes a minute. And, you know, like Kathleen just got me, I was a little late on the alerts. So you probably didn't think we were doing a show today, right?
Yeah, I didn't know. I just got the alert like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, see, there you go. I was gonna say now it was the Jemele Hill ESPN thing, wasn't it?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, definitely. I think I have a comment and a question to everyone that has an opportunity to respond. Have you ever played Pictionary before?
Yes. I know what Pictionary is. I can't remember playing the actual game, but yeah.
Okay,
Kathleen?
Pictionary. So let's say we all was playing Pictionary, and I would say red fruit. And what would you say?
You said red what?
Fruit.
Red fruit?
Right.
I say apple. Uh-huh.
Okay. So when you say apple, I'm going to say to you again, red fruit.
Okay, I'm going to defer that to Kathleen. Kathleen, red fruit. What were we saying, Pictionary? We're on the same team.
Okay, so we're on the same team, so I can't say apple again, right?
No, say something different.
Well, that's a good point. And the reason why I asked that question is because sometimes when people play Pictionary, you say red fruit. They say apple, right? And you say, no, that's not it. You say, well, red fruit, and they said apple. And it's like, why would you say apple again if I tell you that wasn't apple, but it's so many other red fruit, but for some
right,
reason
like
in your head, you
mm-hmm.
right, you say apple again. The reason why I brought that up is because we're dealing with these words, racist, white supremacist, so forth and so on. Those other folks have a issue with the word racism, even though they practice that very well. So what we need to do is turn that around, as Jamel did very well, and she said white supremacist.
Right.
And if you use certain words towards them, then really they have nothing to argue about because they know who they are.
Mm.
So
you know,
I just wanted
what
to raise that comment and question at the same time. Go ahead, Lynn.
No, I was going to say what I think about that, though, is white, when you talk about supremacy or white supremacy, they're usually
mm-hmm.
a little bit more venomous when you say that opposed to being racist. So I think people got used
mm-hmm.
to using racism to water down what white supremacy actually is. Because to know white supremacy, if you tell somebody they're racist, they will say stuff like, I got a black friend. Like, they can almost combat racism by saying that they don't see color, that kind of thing. You can't say that with white supremacy. There is no comeback, right? So if somebody says, you know what, you're a white supremacist, and then they'll say, they don't have a comeback. Like, I don't believe in the genetic domination of white people. Like, they don't have a comeback for that. So I think that's
right.
You're right. If we were using that term, you almost have to shut up or just – they're just going to be mad at you. And I think people don't like to stop dialogue like that when they use words because it makes their friends uncomfortable. Again, we have a lot of compassion. So people of color normally don't like – you know, we get a little squeamish. Like even in this Jemele Hill case, I think it was Daryl Strawberry or somebody who came out that said that he thinks Donald Trump is a good man and Jemele was wrong. Now – I know everybody was saying that, asking the questions whether he was still on drugs or not. But the point was, is that people get uncomfortable when you call that out because their white friends or spouses or whatever may feel uncomfortable. They kind of check you by saying, do you agree with them? And it makes you uncomfortable. But tell all my white friends, I can tell you this, I can care less. I mean, if you know me, you're going to know that you just have to call it how you see it. Doesn't really matter to me. But anyway, I'm sorry, you were saying?
No, that's cool, you're good. So Daryl Strawberry made that statement?
Yeah. I'm sorry to throw that in there at the last minute, yeah, but he did.
Did he say why she was wrong?
No, because he defended Donald Trump. He said that she's wrong in calling him that and that he was a good man and, you know, that we should respect him. It's just like anybody else who defends him. I think if you're black and you defend him, you got to be some kind of crazy. I mean, I don't know what you have to say to black people to make black people not like you. If you still defend Trump, I mean, even what's his name, Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina, even he was like, okay, I think you crossed the line with that whole Charlottesville stuff. At least he had a conversation about it. But to actually be blind and feel some kind of way because somebody black said something to him, that is kind of, that's on the other side of Stockholm's Helsinki syndrome. One of the two. That's like just not knowing. You're kind of delusional. But you said you had a question with that too. I'm sorry.
Well, it was just that comment, or just to open up that, you know, dialogue with that. But I didn't hear the statement Daryl Strawberry made, but by him making that statement, I think, you know, dialogue continues when you ask questions, right? So when he says she's wrong, I'm curious, what exactly is she wrong about? Instead of just the statement itself, what is she wrong about, Mr. Strawberry?
That's one of the things
because
that
I think what's going on. Excuse me, Rome. I think what's going on is that we're falling victim to the same stuff that those other folks are doing, and what we're doing is arguing amongst ourselves, which is really not cool because we're putting our stuff out in the open, and I don't even think Daryl Strawberry understands why she's wrong, because he didn't say it. I mean, it's like what you just said about, oh, well, I got a black friend, you know. Well, Donald Trump is a good guy. Okay, he's a good guy, but it doesn't mean that all the other stuff that he did doesn't make him a bad guy.
Or it doesn't mean that just because he's nice to you, that makes him a friend of yours. Kathleen, I know you're letting the dialogue sit in. You can jump in here now.
Well, what I wanted to say, though, about the, you know, the red fruit was, you know, because I wanted to just make sure I was understanding. I think I get it when you're saying, you know, if somebody's not getting it or they're offended by one word, use another one. Like what she was, that essentially means the same thing, right? So, And I think that's probably great, too, to be able to start a dialogue with that, with someone that might be reasonable or have some common sense or something. But I think there's also a lot of power and importance beyond being able to call a spade a spade and to have to resort to calling white folks white supremacists because maybe they feel better with that. Or they can open a conversation with that, kind of diffuses it a little bit in my eyes because what they are is white supremacists, racist, fascist, bigots, right? That's what, you know.
Right.
So we call them racist and they get angry, so we call them white supremacists because that's the platform that they stand on. But then it kind of diffuses it or minimizes it a little bit to people who understand what racism and racists are and what racism is. So when you say white supremacists, people are not even really sure if that's a bad thing. Is that a bad thing? You know, I know they use this other term now, that, you know, or they use nationalist or alt-left. And then people are like, okay, it sounds kind of cool. Am I alt-left or am I alt-right? So now you don't even know what the hell it is. You don't even know what it is or what you're fighting against or where or who's what. And I think that's what happens is, like, they kind of hide the marbles by using the terms, you know, using all these different terms that will kind of throw folks off from understanding who they really are.
Yeah, but that's what's so clever about how supremacy works, right? So you make a moral equivalent to whatever your extreme version is, right? So you have to remember during the 60s, they made like terror groups. The Klan is terrorizing people in the South, and they actually put the NAACP as a terror group during that time.
Yeah.
Because they were defending the people who were getting killed. So what the alt-right has done, nobody's ever heard a term alt-left until after the Charlottesville thing, because there were people defending against white supremacy. So to be different to them, they had to have an extreme. So they're like, oh, the violent alt-left. Of course there's going to be violence in the attempt to stop you from being violent. They weren't the aggressors. But they do such a clever job on the marketing side of creating a moral equivalent on the opposite side that it makes you believe that they're both the same. So it's like comparing the Klan to the Panthers back in the days, what they used to say, you know, these black militant leftist groups. And it's like nobody was hunting down white folks. Never have. But they do such a good job of scaring other white folks to believe that they can't even see. They think the Klan is necessary because now y'all got these other people on this other side. You know, so that's why words being used like that is always kind of, for me, is always kind of important to parse through that, because there are no counter organizations to these militia, neo-Nazi, white nationalist, white supremacist group. There are none on the other side. And ironically, who they're calling the anti-fascists, those people are white who are fighting them. Those are not black organizations that are doing that. They would,
that's right,
at least would,
yeah, that's
right.
Right, and so even though they're calling them violent, they're still their own people. But they try, you know,
yeah,
what I mean? So we have to parse through that, and that's why we do news, is because we have to kind of parse through that, opposed to leaving ambiguous things out there for everybody else to kind of love them sleep. And again, recently I had a conversation where people, you know, actually I had this conversation because Sloane Stephens, who won the U.S. Open, she's black, right? Madison Keys is biracial. One of her parents is black. And Madison Keys says, you know, in the past, she said this. I don't know how she feels now. She may have a Tiger Woods moment. But she said she doesn't consider herself black because she doesn't look at race the same, because millennials don't look at race the same anymore. That's what Madison Keys said.
Yep.
So I'll never cheer for Madison Keys. But here's the thing. She said because millennials, like the old people who are racist, are dying out. But if you look at Charlottesville, those white folks were millennials.
They sure were.
So you can see how black people get lulled to sleep every 10, 20 years. And then the Klan folks come back out, and everybody's like shocked. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe they're still here. Right? So
well,
you can't let people – go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Finish.
Well, I was going to say, I don't want to put any – I didn't research this, so I'm just saying my opinion. Madison Keys, her mom is the person that I see on the tour with her, and her mom is white. Her father is Haitian. And not – in addition to that, her coach is Chrissy Everett. So
right,
there would be, you know, I don't know. But if I recall the way Chrissy Everett talked about the Williams sisters in the beginning, while she's changed her tune now, I
yes,
don't know how big it will go over for what, you know, her star, you know, biracial athlete to be, you know, talking about Black Lives Matter, or even that she identifies as black and her mom is white. You know, I don't know. But,
right.
I did feel some kind of way when I read that she made that statement that she doesn't consider herself African American, or she, whatever her stuff was about race. And part of the reason that I was cheering for Sloane was not only that, but because everybody in the U.S. Open, the commentators, all of them were all looking for their little girl Maddie to win. And I just
exactly
wondered, there's this energy around it. It's like, well, why is that? Is it, you know, she wasn't that much better than Sloane. I know Sloane was a tremendous underdog, you know, coming back from being ranked 800 and something to get to
she
where
was. She was 957. She was 957.
And then I think she went to 803 or something. But, yeah, 957 to win the championship over the, you know, the preferred Maddie, you know, their girl,
yeah.
Chrissy Everett's yeah. girl. So I and Sloan had a black coach. So it was just that was.
Yes.
That was.
Her mother
was
there.
Really, yes. Her mother, a former swimmer,
yes.
and her camp. It was so amazing. I don't know. Well, before we go into the U.S. Open story, because I really do have something I really want to share with you, but I just wanted to tell the brother on the line that,
Sean.
You know,
Your son's name.
Sean. Hi, Sean. My son's name is Sean. I don't know how I didn't catch that initially, but you know, I did think of strawberries. You know, and I as the when you said okay, Kathleen, I was like I thought of strawberries, I thought of raspberries, but you know, for me it was like no, look, I really want an apple right now. And I said, apple, you know, and then it goes right to the point of thinking. Listen, no, if it's a flipping apple, it's an apple, and it's a racist, it's a racist. And I'm
right.
going to say it again, whether they want to be called a white supremacist or whatever kind of alt, whatever they want to do, it's an apple.
Hey, we get to name them what the heck we want to name them. That's how I feel about it. You know, that's
no,
not our
I'm
call.
Sorry. The only point I was trying to make is that I got you. If you want to keep saying apple, that's cool. I get it. I was using the Pictionary analogy to a point where when we play the game, Pictionary, and the rule is that I'm going to say something and you guess what's on my card, right? So when
yes.
I say red fruit, when I say red fruit and the person says apple, and I say no, that's not it, and then I say red fruit again, and then their mind says apple again, right? There's a miscommunication there somewhere. There's a breakdown of miscommunication. And what happens is we have to be a little bit smarter than those other guys. And what they're doing a very good job at, they're getting us to argue back and forth based on certain words that is being put out there.
Right.
And that's,
right.
that's the only point that I'm making. So
yeah,
we have to be a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I agree with that. That's why the words are not as important as what the actions are. That's what drives me crazy about this Trump guy is that he'll
mm-hmm.
say something one day, and then he'll say the complete opposite the other day, like you're supposed to forget about what
yes.
he said yesterday.
Yes. Yes.
And then he'll
yes.
go back and say the same thing that he said 2 days ago, and then he'll be like,
yeah,
yes. but once he said he liked black people, you know, I don't know if you saw Kid Rock said that, because, you know, Kid Rock – you know, from his, you know, he was a DJ hanging around rappers back in the days. You know, he rapped a little bit, I think. And he's rocking around with, the, you know, rocking the Confederate flag, saying all of this negative stuff, Black Lives Matter and all this. And they called him racist the other day. So he wrote an op-ed to someone because he's talking about he might want to run for Senate in Michigan or something. He wrote an op-ed saying, He loves black people, or he likes black people. It's like, yeah, but you're rolling around with a Confederate flag antagonizing black people at the same time you're enjoying black people's culture. You know, so I can care less about your black friends. That don't have anything to do with it. That just means to me that no matter what you call it, you still are a supremacist. Like, you still practice supremacy. Because you're enjoying the crowds that you're getting on tour. You're going on the country music stuff now. You're waving a Confederate flag, and you're getting that applause from them, knowing what that's invoking in them. At the same time, you want to still keep your relationship with black people. I know black people are cool. I like black folks myself. But I'm saying he still wants to keep his privilege placed amongst black people. At the same time, he wants to live the life of, you know, of comfort, of being of supremacy, you know. And so we have to be conscious of that part too as well. You know, when somebody wants to be your friend but wants to hate on all the other black folks in the world but still wants you to be cool with them, you know.
Well,
that's
wait,
true.
You know, as much as things change, they stay the same. Like, don't we know the story already?
We sure do. None of us are moved by it either. We just see it and just keep it moving. All right. Now, Kathleen, you said you wanted to, there was another story that you wanted to bring up?
Oh, just about the U.S. Open and the moment at the end of the match when the oh, my
okay.
goodness. I was in tears. I was in tears because.
Before you do that, Sean, did you see the U.S. Open?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so Sloane Stephens wins, and apparently, you know, the commentators are talking about how great she and Madison Keys are friends because they were lower level on the tour maybe about 4 years ago. Now, Sloane is only 24, but, you know, she beat Serena before. She lost to her quite a few times. She admires the heck out of Venus. Even when she won, she said that she is our leader. Sloane's words was, Venus is our leader, and we look up to aspire to be like her. Her stature, her grace, and all is. Sloane is a very big Venus fan. And I think she admires Serena too, but she's a Venus fan. And so when she won, she didn't sit on her side of the court. She actually went and hugged Madison Keys, who lost. And then while they were waiting for the ceremony, they were waiting for, I knew the woman's name too, do you know the woman's name from Chase, Kathleen?
No, I don't know her name.
Okay. Well, there is the head of marketing for Chase. Okay. This is the interesting thing about it to me. Not only did the person who came from Chase, she was black. The head of the tennis association, she was black. Right?
Katrina Adams.
So Katrina Adams comes out to give her the trophy. Then the woman from Chase Bank comes out to give her a check, and I will let Kathleen do the rest of this. What happened?
So the two players, of course, the finalist, Madison Keys, is black, whether she, you know, whatever.
She admits it or not.
But, you know, she's black, and Sloane is a black woman. The last time, and they are two American women, right? The last time two American women were in the finals at the U.S. Open was in 2002, and that was Venus and Serena. So they made history by being two American women in the U.S. Open finals. A black woman winning again, as you know, so they're making history, and neither of them were a Williams sister, because they did say that no other black woman other than a Williams sister would ever win a slam, essentially. That was insinuation. So then they have the two finalists that are there receiving the presentation, the runner up, the champion, and then the check is presented to the winner by a black woman, and then the trophies are presented to the winners and the finalists by a black woman. This is the first time ever in the history of the world, in tennis championships around the world, that you would ever see four black people, much less four black women, standing up and claiming those trophies. It was such a moving moment. And to, you know, I've been in tennis since I was, I don't know, 4 years old. My dad was a tennis player. And I remember all the times that they said, you know, basically black folks don't really play tennis. You can't play tennis. You can't learn enough. I mean, excuse me, you can't afford to play. It's a white man's sport. It's this, it's that, and the other. And Sloane even said that in her speech. She said that when she was at a summer camp that her mom put her in, the coach told her she would never be better than her. Her best hope is that she might be a Division II player. And so, you know, she articulated what most black kids and black parents who are going through who will want to put their children in tennis. So it was a highlight, I think, of my year to see that. It was amazing, and I will never, ever forget that.
Oh, see, you know where I thought you were going with this? I thought you were going to go to the check, to her reaction to the check.
Reaction to the check is priceless. You can take that one. But no, I took this one because it was a tear filled moment for me. I mean, really, called all my friends that are black women tennis players, and we were all immediately just stunned. We took pictures of the TV, everything. We're like, oh my God, who would have thought it? So you know, it was really, really very moving.
Yeah, you know, and so at the end, you know, as they're doing the award ceremony, the woman comes up to give her the check. And so over the announcement, they said, presenting the check for $3.7 million, and Sloane's face was, I mean, she literally says, wow. And then she looks at her and she's like, that's a lot of money to Madison Keys. And just the reaction on her face, it was like, you know, over her years, I think, from 2007. So now I think she made a total of $4.7 million. I think it was $4.3 million. And in this one check, it was $3.7 mil. So just her playing, apparently she wasn't playing for the money because she didn't know what the money was. Like, obviously you win a lot of money in playing those tournaments. But even right at the end, her appreciation for just not just winning. She was happy to win. She was surprised to win. But even in her receiving the check showed a lot of she has this humble quality to her that I think that people are going to love and hate her for. And the reason I say that is Sloane is dark complexion. Sloane is not boastful. She doesn't. You would think that people are going to like her automatically, but I think Sloane, who is dating a professional soccer player, he's a, you know, nice sized, tall black guy, dark complexion. You're not getting away from the Williams sisters in image when you talk about Madison Keys. So I think that Sloane's disposition is, I think the Williams sisters was a little bit more happy go lucky than Sloane is. Although she's a lovely person and all of that, I think that Sloane, as far as, you know, people in the community is concerned, not to compare them on the Williams sisters because they're phenomenal, but I think Sloane kind of continues the same tradition in which the Williams sisters had in their relationship to being in the community. So I think you're right, Kathleen. I mean, that's the bottom line, is that anybody should be proud to see Sloane just like they were Venus and Serena. Probably,
oh, yeah.
I would think even more to me.
Even more.
Yeah. Because, you know, even though, you know, I guess there's been some articles, and I know people try to put folks up against each other, but there's been some articles about Serena may have an issue with Madison kind of stuff, but I think that's just all hearsay. But like I said, she's a big Venus fan, so. But anyway, if you get a chance to see that, get a chance to look it up on, you know, social media or something. Sloane Stephens is, she is impressive. That's all I have to say about her. But, yeah. Oh, so I didn't know you wanted to go to that. I thought it was something else that you wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you missed that. All right. Sean, is there something that we missed on the show?
No, I just came on, like I said, just before the Jamel Hill comment, so.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, at the end of the show, we still like to, I know there's some stories that I normally don't talk about that's in the news, but I just like to put out other stories. Like, you know, there's a new book that says, there's a new book that says something that we all know, saying thinking positive changes how other people perceive you. There was a story about that, but we won't talk about that. We'll talk about it in the next show. And then John Hopkins scientists set a new record in an up-and-coming field for medical drones. They sent a drone across 161 miles of the desert transporting human blood. So they're going to start using drones for transporting all kind of things. They've already tested that stuff out as well. So, and there's a new artificial intelligence that can detect sexual orientation up to 91% is what they're saying. And they're saying that it can also read and tell with accuracy if your political leanings and political affiliation and something else. But they're just saying, like, we have all of these AI drone stuff going on. So I didn't do a lot of technology today, but I'll definitely share it on the next program.
Did you talk about Spelman accepting transgender students?
No. You know, we missed that the last show, too, because, again, I really wasn't interested in. But I will, you know, let's talk about that because I didn't take that story down. But I saw the reports where people were pretty irritated with Spelman for I guess it's Spelman's president, but I guess the board would have to make that decision, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think they did.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm not familiar with the story at all.
One of your favorite journalist shows, Roland Martin. there's a little uproar on against it on social media, of course, protesting the mandate or the passing of whatever regulation that says that they were going to accept transgender students now at Spelman, which is an all women historically black college. So, it's said and done, and they will start doing it officially. I guess I would imagine that there might be some transgender students there already. But I thought it was interesting that Roland Martin had two transgender people on his show talking about the decision. And one was for, and one was, interestingly enough, against.
Now, don't Spelman and Morehouse share campus? Aren't they like right across the street from each other?
Yeah, they're very close. I don't know.
I think they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they do. And far as I know, that they sometimes share like classes. There are some classes that you can go through sharing campus kind of thing. And anyway, I don't get it, and I don't understand that. I don't understand it enough to even really make too much of a comment. But it just seems strange to me when we start changing institutions for that stuff. That's all I can say about it because I don't understand it enough. So when somebody says to me that you can, I don't know, have a sex change or not, I don't know what transgender technically is. But I think that that's kind of wrong to do, and you shouldn't force the other students because now you're making that decision for the rest of the student body when they knew they were going to a school that was all female. They knew they were going to that school, and now you made a decision to change the whole concept of the student body. But I guess it's the same thing when you have Wilman Smith. Or was it, there's a school near, it's not Hobart, William Smith. I think it's William Smith. Anyway, there's a school in upstate New York that was a women's school. And Nazareth, that's the name of the school. Nazareth was a women's school, and I know they made it a men's school. I don't know what the fallout was from the alumni of Nazareth, but I'm sure Spelman's alumni has to probably be yelling about this. Matter of fact, I'm going to call alumni of Spelman that I know, and I'm going to ask about her and some fellow alumni and see what they think about that. But I really don't. I don't think I know enough about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that I did see that. I did see that that story. Didn't know what to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You can tell I might have lost the words. I am really at a loss of words for that story. Brother Sean,
we're all pretty quiet, right?
I know. That's what I'm like. Brother Sean, you have any comments on that?
No, I'm a lost word too, brother. I mean, yeah,
I think I'm just going to say apple right now.
Yeah, apple. That's it.
Yeah, apple. Yeah, I like that one. Yep, apple.
Apple has just become a slave word. thanks for that. Hey, Brother Sean, you know, Claude Anderson is coming to town on Saturday. I'll have to call you and talk to you about that. Did you know?
Yeah, I'll do that. No, I'll do that. Give me a call.
Okay. All right. So you're listening to Esprit News. I guess we will be back again next week, and hopefully my alert will come out a little bit on time this time. And Kathleen will be around a little earlier. My bad, Kathleen.
No problem.
All right. So, but at least we did get Sloan Stevens in. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
Because I really wanted to talk about her. So, and shout out to Sloan Stevens. If we can get her on the show, I'll make sure that happens. That'd be cool.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
All right. Well, we'll see you again next week. I'll holla, Kathleen.
Holla.
All right. See you next week. Peace.